You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Blink, do it now. Pay careful attention to everything you see. No matter how unusual it may seem. If you look away, even for an instant, then our hero will surely perish.
Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Cale Smith, and I am joined by a bunch of new guests and a familiar one. So can the new guests introduce them and the old, and the not old, familiar, starting with?
Danilo.
Kate. Aaron, I'm old.
You're not old.
Hi, my name is Aaron. How's everyone doing? I haven't seen you for a minute.
And I'm Cameron.
Come on, Billy!
They let me out of the nursing home for this one.
All right. All right, folks. And today we are going to be talking about Kubo and the Two Strings. Woo! Now, you might be wondering, why are we talking about a movie that is, like, what, 3 weeks old now?
Yeah,
because it's great.
For me, I've been wanting to talk about this movie for a long time, but it's been hard to kind of... figure out how to do it, and also I've never had the best luck with doing podcasts with about kid movies,
right?
Because despite popular belief, most kid movies are not that great. But
what you talking about? Ice Age Collision Course was amazing.
Speaking for yourself. Cameron, can you close the door for just a second?
Oh yeah.
Every good kid movie, I'm just usually like, I can't get anyone. And Jungle Book was kind of like awkward because I was just talking all by myself on this podcast for 15 minutes.
Well, me and my friend saw Zootopia opening night. So if there's anyone who's not afraid by breaching the demographic, 'tis I, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, and I understand why none of the college community likes to go see kid movies. I mean... Whenever there's a kid movie, there's apparently families and little kids, and they can get restless. Yeah. So, I understand completely.
We can't bring our alcohol and drugs in. No,
yeah, we can't make out in the middle of the theater.
The parents will be questionable.
I think all I just remember is like I think a couple of years back when Toy Story 3 was in theaters, all I just see is nothing but teenagers and adults, and then like
I definitely think there was more adults crying in that one than there was actual right. kids.
Another example, Monsters University.
Yes.
Yeah.
But a lot of parents took their teenage offspring to see that movie also.
Well, yeah, because that teenage offspring probably grew up as infants watching the first movie.
Yeah. So that makes sense, but if you're doing a new intellectual property like Zootopia and you see a bunch of 20-somethings going in there with an influx of 5 or 6-year-olds,
yeah,
it's a little weird. We're not the demographic.
Yeah. Even though that movie is, you know, much more, you know, insightful or much more in intellectually stimulating than most people think.
Yeah.
But so anyway, Kubo...
Speaking of breaking the demographic, all of us, whichever age we are, saw Kubo.
Yeah. And I'm actually proud of it. I'm proud that all five of us got a chance and saw Kubo because apparently it's not doing too well at the box office. It's still in the top five, but we know what the top five is around this time of year. It's not, you know, huge numbers.
Refresher on that. Just
what do you mean?
Like what are the top five right now?
Don't Breathe, Suicide Squad.
Still?
Really?
Yeah, it's number two. I think Kubo is at number three. I might be wrong. I can't remember what 4 and 5 are.
All
right. Research time.
Well, when Danilo will look up Box Office Mojo for the top 5. Let's talk about Kubo for a second. So, right. I really like Kubo. I like it not because of its story and characters, but I love its animation. And I love how the stop motion animation just looks so, you know, lifelike. And,
yeah.
And not only lifelike, but it doesn't look like stop motion animation.
And I guess for one side, for me personally, because I think just most of this year, the majority I kind of feel like I see in theaters is mostly just been either Disney related or mostly superhero type films.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, so both.
Yeah. And so. And so I think a little bit later on through the year, I think like the last one that comes to mind was Kubo and the Two Strings, and that's the one that caught my attention. I was like, okay, I think this one really got my attention. I said, like, let's try to tell my friends, say, like, let's go watch something breaking the flow, since I'll be watching with superhero movies. And then watching that movie theater, I was just so happy I actually watched this one, because I just felt like, to me personally, how much I love animated movies. I just feel like for this kind of stop motion animation, many people don't really know about how much time and effort people like put in trying to take every known motion capture to this kind of type of animation.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think Kubo definitely breaks the mold in the sense of it does stop motion animation, which is very different from most animation that you see in kids' movies. The other way I think it breaks the mold too, though, is that the Laika films, which I've seen all 4 of them, and really 3 of them have not been afraid to visit kind of a darker side of kid movies, talking about death, talking about some scary horror stuff facing
God,
fears.
Caroline, jeez.
God.
Coraline.
whoops.
Well, you gotta understand, most of those movies were made by the same director, Tim Burton.
No.
No?
Did it? Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. Tim Burton never directed the Laika films.
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't.
Caroline.
Research.
No, Henry Selick did Caroline.
Like, I think
did one of those. I know that for sure.
Henry Selick did Caroline. I don't know who did Paranorman. No, Paranorman was the guy who brought us Flushed Away.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That gem.
That's...
Yeah, because like, I think, yeah, for some reason, like, whenever you think of like with those movies, it's just I think when it came to like on theaters, and then we see like commercials of it, I just feel like there's just that side narrator said, like, from the studio who brought you Nightmare Before Christmas, that comes in at the side of it. So I guess like one reason some people think about Tim Burton, especially with Nightmare Before Christmas, but
yeah,
plus it's just the stylistic of the movie. That's
it's definitely, it's got that darker style to it. I don't think any of them are directed by Tim Burton. I could be wrong on that.
But
Burton did a movie that kind of started the company. I think he did. Well, he did Corpse Bride, but I think I want to say Laika had a part in it somehow, or like before Laika was Laika, they had a part in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Corpse Bride was one of them. Tim Burton and Mike Johnson, so they did Corpse Bride.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he threw some money in the pot to help actually make it, because I felt like Coraline, Paranorman, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't crazy about Box Trolls, but Kubo.
Speaking of Box Trolls,
a lot of people are that I've talked to are not big fans of Box Trolls.
No. Box Trolls was very bizarre, and it just didn't have the same kind of feel as Coraline and Paranorman, where
I didn't have a connection with the movie when it came to Box Trolls. I watched it once and I was like, I would never watch this again with anybody.
And like, learning from like the beginning of Kubo and the Two Strings, like, I guess we just all agreed, like, it did not start out kid friendly. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, those of you that go see it, Kubo as a baby, his grandfather, I believe, stole one of his eyes.
Yeah,
like, straight up ripped out one of his eyes, which, like, to me is terrifying.
To me, I was like really into it, because the way how he like started off his narration, I was like, oh my god, this guy sounds cool. So like, blink, and then you'll miss a thing. And I was like really into it. I was like, oh god.
Well, I mean, again, this kind of goes back to kid-friendly kid movies like Zootopia or the first Toy Story
or Finding Dory recently.
Yeah, and then you see all of these more grittier but still PG films that are still aimed towards that demographic. When we saw the film, there was no one at the theater, which totally stinks. But there was a few of my friends who went and did go and see it. And there were kids absolutely terrified in this one specific part that's still fairly in the middle of the film.
Is it the underwater scene?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, and there were kids, like, legitimately terrified about that.
I thought they would be more terrified of Rooney Mara.
No, like, kids whining, kids crying. Some of them actually need to, like, go out and, like, skip that portion. It's like, wow, this movie went there.
No, the aunt That's scared cool. me when they first appear on screen.
Yeah, the aunts are definitely the scariest part of that movie. Because even when the giant flying caterpillar thing shows up at the end, I was watching it and I just thought, that's so pretty.
Yeah.
I wouldn't run away from that.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm like, you know, there's other than Rooney Mara, everything's beautiful. So it's hard to be afraid of everything. But then again, mm-hmm. I'm a 22-year-old guy. So, you know, it's hard for me to get scared by things that are, you know, beautiful.
Right. One thing that I do have to say about the animation, and this is something that I said while watching it. I was looking at her and then I was watching the film. I was like, this doesn't look like it was stop motion. This looks too well produced to where, like, no, this has to be made from, like, a computer.
I think some of it is.
Like, no, 90% of this was, like, stop by hand. I'm like, holy,
like, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there was, like, something, like, out of all the places, I think there was, like, a short thing on Nickelodeon where they say, like, and a scene, like, 3 seconds of a scene and Kubo took about roughly a week to do.
Yeah.
I was sort of like, oh my god.
Like, I'm pretty sure the water was not stop motion. That had to have been
some
form of CGI, which I totally understand. Mm-hmm. But everything was just so well done and so detailed in each animation, like with the movement of their eyes to just mannerisms in either the hands or the face.
Mm-hmm.
That level of detail I thought could only be done on a computer, but if they took the time to actually do it by hand, props to the animation team. So I hope it gets nominated for something.
Definitely. I agree. Like, especially saying, like, even though I enjoy Zootopia, but something like what Kubo did with that style of animation, like, many people should appreciate seeing, like, how much they have to took with that. It's with that kind of animation, they especially have to go by saying, why didn't they have to mess up a scene? They have to go ahead and redo that part.
I'm actually curious. I'm going to look up how long the production time for Kubo was.
While you do that, one of the things I wanted to mention in Kubo before we move to Laika films in general is I love the themes that are present, you know, especially with the, you know, motif of the grandfather and the sisters.
Yeah.
Of that they're blind, and that, you know, and I feel like that is a representation of they're blind to humanity's flaws. And they don't want to, you know, they don't want to confront it. So they have, you know, blinded themselves from, you know, reality. And and so when Charlie Theron's character, the monkey, who is the mom, and by the way, we're in spoilers, so
yeah.
A little too late for that one.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I forgot to point. I always forget to mention spoilers.
While we're in that lull, Kubo was officially announced for production on December 22nd, 2014.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
2014,
yeah. So at the end of 2014, they started storyboarding, pre-production, and then they eventually started, you know, mess around with the clay
models. I thought it would take longer, but that's still...
Well, then again, Laika Studios is a... It's almost like a sweatshop now with how efficient they know how to do this stuff.
Well, sure, but still, it's stop motion, it's animation. So, but then again, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, I heard the other day that 3D printing is now kind of coming into doing claymation because they're able, I guess, to print out some different facial expressions and then maybe, or at least like, actual molds and then maybe put the clay around it or something like that. So if that's actually a possibility, like what I was hearing the other day, that would make things go quite a bit faster, that you're not having to maybe mold out like the actual shape and then go in with the detail.
Well, I mean, you can't 3D print the hair.
Yeah,
it was like a lot of it you would have to do it, you know, just by hand, but I think some of like the bigger shapes you could at least print those out and then
just the beetle torso. Yeah. Probably.
So were there anything that, you know, anybody disliked about the movie? Was there anything about the movie that, you know, rubbed anyone the wrong way?
I have to say, the only thing I thought was a bit bizarre was, once again, spoiler, at the end of the movie, they end up defeating the grandfather and he becomes human, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has no memory. And I thought it was so bizarre that the entire town just accepted that you've just destroyed our town. You've killed one of our, like, you know, Kubo's, that grandfather has killed both his mother and his father.
Yeah.
And has terrorized him his whole life.
But thanks for being the moon, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a bizarre ending with, I forgive you and everything's happy and fine now. And I suppose some of that goes back to, you know, well, it's family. Yeah. But, I mean, for the town, I just thought, that's not your family. I would.
Well,
the town would be normally pretty angry.
Well,
that's what I'm thinking.
Would have you preferred the ending that you got or a realistic ending where Kubo says, no, screw you, and kills the grandfather?
I'm not necessarily saying kills him, but at least maybe exiles him or something. Or at least, you know, something other than just...
Make him a janitor.
I just feel that's
kid friendly.
It was.
You're gonna do my chores for a whole month.
But I don't know. I thought that was kind of an odd message to kind of do the whole. You can do something really terrible, but then if you forget everything, then everybody is just gonna accept you for.
Well, what I got from it was, this is Kubo's only family. This is his last thing that he has. Like, mm-hmm. his aunts are dead. His parents are dead. This is the only thing that he has. And I think the village sees that. Like, what are we going to do with this kid?
He still has his origami.
Well, yeah, but still. The most awesome
street performance ever.
Well, true. And just maybe reconnecting and, like, showing the grandfather a different way. That's what I brought onto it.
Okay.
I think one of my friends did ask me by saying, like, at the end of the movie, by saying, like, I think they're saying they were surprised they didn't pull like a Disney out of nowhere saying like, oh, and his parents come back to normal. I was like, no, I feel like I could have gotten a little bit salty if just some magic stuff happens. They're like, oh, there's his parents.
Yeah.
Well, the movie at the end is bittersweet in that, you know, and he says that it is a happy story, but it's symbolically a happy story because even though his parents are dead, their spirits are with him. So, you know, and going back to the ending, like, yeah, the ending with the grandfather is a little anticlimactic, mm-hmm. but I think it has a stronger significance when you know, Kubo comes up to him and forgives him for everything. And I think because of everything and because of Kubo's leadership and because of that decision, everyone kind of follows with him.
Building a little bit off that, I've told Kale and I've told Kate this, but around the last act of the film is nothing but plot twists. So already for the finale, your expectations are built so high to either be another plot twist or something just grandiose. For it to be a I forgive you sort of ending is a little, oh, well, okay. I mean, I guess, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. You know, kill old people, but
we can kill that old guy.
Yeah. I guess I would have liked a little bit more of a punishment, or at least him. I guess I was waiting for that gratifying moment when he sees that he's been wrong about everything this whole time, and instead he forgets.
I think with doing that change, it would either push the film to be maybe even a PG-13 rating, mm-hmm. depending on a punishment that you could do to that sort of person, or still do a punishment regardless, but still keep it family friendly.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure like he knows by at that ending, he's just like, everyone is dead from like his parents and it's too.
Well, he doesn't know that. He doesn't remember anything. So, I mean,
they go along with it that he didn't do it.
Yeah. And what if that old man is just acting? Because
What are you talking about? It's a kids' movie.
Well, there's nothing he can really do.
There's no shades of gray here. No, it's all black and white.
Well, I mean, there's nothing he can do, and also that you know would cause any more destruction, and also, it is a little odd that he has no memory because when his mom, you know, became now like he could, like when she got her eyesight back from the beetle, or I guess his dad. She remembered everything before, you know, before meeting his dad.
Well, I don't think it was them, because they had the memories that entire time. The only thing that they didn't remember was from their change on. Like, for example, the Beetle, brilliantly voice acted by Matthew McConaughey, by the way.
All right.
So Hanzo. He remembers everything about Hanzo, and then all of a sudden, when he got changed into a beetle, temporary amnesia of the connection that you used to be Hanzo. You remember who Hanzo is and everything about him. You just don't remember that you used to be Hanzo. So once that truth has been told, he's like, "Oh, well, okay, that makes sense. I'm just gonna start believing that now." He doesn't all of a sudden remember everything. He just makes the connection that okay. This is this.
Also, can I just say, like, one part of the day made me smile a little bit. Like, whenever they tell a story about Hanzo, then you see the little paper of Hanzo, like, saying, like, that's me! Like, going around with it.
Do I have eyelids?
Well, so, let's move on to Leica films for a second. We already kind of dived into it, but I want to talk about why do we think Leica films doesn't get as much attention as they should.
Why do we think Leica doesn't get as much attention?
Yeah, I mean Pixar and DreamWorks and I guess now Blue Sky, they're now becoming like huge. Hold on. They're becoming like huge, you know. They're becoming like these huge.
It's like there's a giant wall between Family Friendly and Leica. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Cameron, what were you going to say? Yeah,
I kind of feel like, especially just because like it's Disney. It just feel like they're kind of like, especially with just merchandise, they literally just kind of like just shove it down in your face just so much as it is. Like, especially, like, chances of all, like, whenever you're, maybe people say when they have kids, and then, like, if they're, like, driving to work or school with them, they put a DVD in the back, chances are usually it's going to be a Disney film. And so, I guess it's just because with that little mindset, like, with kids, like, the first thing that's come to mind, especially when they go to, like, you know, Walmart, Target, or Toys R Us, you're going to see, I'm pretty sure we already seen our guaranteed of Marvel, especially Frozen, and even though not Disney, though, but Minions.
And yeah. So, Illumination, yeah.
And so, oh, yeah, that's right. I meant Illumination, not Blue Sky, sorry.
Okay.
Right. And so, and I guess it's because with, like, that, with that time of merchandise, they kind of, like, go right into your face for kids by seeing that kind of mind with animation. And I think with I'm sorry, what's the name of the studio again?
Leica Studios.
Normally with that type one, I just feel like it should have been more appreciated more, especially with, even though with all that time and precise with all their animation they're putting onto, and then I guess it's just really not saying not everyone can't be Disney or DreamWorks and just try to put everything in your face.
Mm. Right. So.
I think kind of with Disney and Pixar, I know for me, I have grown up on Disney and Pixar, and so it is so nostalgic whenever one of their movies comes out. I think I pretty much see the trailer and just assume I'm going to go see that at some point because it's a Disney-Pixar film, and it's a musical, and I want to be a Disney princess, so... We're doing this.
Well,
but with
hashtag Moana.
Yeah. And, but with, Leica, one, they aren't quite as kid friendly. You can't take your 6-7-year-old to go see it because it's going to scare them. I remember.
Unless they're brave.
Yeah.
I think you can. I don't think you can't challenge children with adult themes.
I think.
And for me, I think, cause I look at Kubo and like, yeah, they're scary images, but. There's nothing in there that they probably haven't seen on Nickelodeon with like The Last Airbender or Korra.
Korra, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything that isn't as dark as something they haven't already seen.
I mean, I guess for me, though, when Coraline came out, that kind of set the tone for Laika, because that was their first one, probably out of, I'm going to say three, because I'm not counting box trolls, sorry.
okay.
Yeah, but out of the three, I still feel like Coraline was the best. I mean, Ian McShane's voice work, and then you've got a little bit of an older Dakota Fanning that's that's voicing
Terry Hatchett, or Terry Hatchett being the mom.
It was all voiced very well. It was such a good mixture of childhood fantasy and fear. It really was that monster in your closet, and I loved it. But I remember when I went and saw that one, that I think I was probably like 14 or 15, and it terrified me. Like, when the mom becomes the spider and she's about to kill the daughter.
Right.
I mean, even when she goes into the mirror and she sees the ghost children, I just remember being, like, absolutely scared. Just thinking, there's dead kids in this movie, for one. And two, this woman is going to, I don't know if she's going to eat her or just keep her there and kill her.
I'll never look at a garden the same way.
Yeah, you'd never look at buttons after that. And
exactly.
Just think,
freaking buttons!
I know, that movie made you afraid of buttons. But no, I just remember, though, seeing that and being kind of scared. And honestly, I remember I went and saw it with my mom, and we talked about it. We talked about, this is not really a kids movie. This is
a middle schoolers movie.
Yeah.
And what I'm about to say, and even though I'm talking about how Disney's been going on with just Pretty Princess, just by saying, Disney, just so many people just haven't forget, Disney has done certain films that have scared the crap out of people. Like, I don't know if many people know this film know this animated film today was The Brave Little Toaster.
Oh, that.
That scared me.
That freaking clown, and the part where it's just like, what's going on with the air conditioning, and he just freaked out and just exploded. I was like, oh my god, I can't handle, my 8-year-old mind can barely try to get through with this.
Yeah.
So, and I guess we're seeing with Laika films, or just any other type of film with this horror type of thing going into this movie, I feel like at least somewhere off that it had like this bit of influence from those type of films and try to bring it here and today. Because, like, even though...
Go ahead. Yeah, I just have a point to make.
Yeah. Even though just by saying, like, if you bring your kids to this, by saying, oh, they're probably not gonna like this. Besides, Disney always do kid-friendly stuff. No, they don't.
One thing that I would have to add between what might be the difference between a Disney Pixar movie versus a Laika movie and why the two demographics might be a little bit totally different. It has to do, at least for me, with a combination of cinematography and the writing of it. Let's say, for example, we look at two different iconic characters from Zootopia and Kubo.
Keep in mind, Zootopia is not Pixar.
Well, it's still Disney.
Okay. I just wanted to put that in perspective for people.
Officer Hops. It's a bunny. Tiny bunny wearing, like, police gear.
It's cute.
Yeah. She's running around stopping ferrets from stealing donuts. Yeah, it's hilarious. Whereas you look at the beetle in Kubo, where it's this giant beetle that's been changed in that way because he's now a hermit creature. Which is going to be more appealing? A bunny in a cop suit? Or a giant beetle crawling around in a cave?
With amnesia.
Yeah.
And not even if you're just comparing the two main characters, one's a kid that's had his eye ripped out. That's
from his grandfather.
Yeah, from his grandfather. I mean, that's another thing with Laika, is I feel like Disney always tells you, you know, your family will always be there for you and always trust your friends and everything. And you look at something like Kubo, at the end of the movie, his family has killed his parents, orphaned him. And it's a very bittersweet ending for Kubo.
It's harsh reality.
He's got the town, and also, he's got his grandfather.
Another thing that I can say, like, just the general shapes that are in those types of films, because either a Disney film or a Pixar film, they like making roundish shapes in their films. Whereas you look at Laika, they like pointy edges. They like making accented lines whenever they're either showing whatever a character looks like or an environment, whatever, whatever. Round things are going to be a little bit more appealing than sharp things when it comes to animation.
Also, I noticed this. I actually watched Paranorman with some friends last night that hadn't seen it, and I told them, you've got to see it because it's great. If you'll notice with Disney films, a lot of times, especially in the girls, they are all in this pristine, perfect figure. If you
the controversial Disney figure.
Yeah, it's the very, you know, super tiny waist and it's
princess look.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's all that. As far as Laika goes, if you look at the shapes of the people, they're much more realistic shapes. They're women that have got bigger hips, smaller breasts.
The freaking old lady.
Yeah, I mean, they are not in this.
She was funny.
But yeah, I mean, it's,
she was fat.
They don't try and make everybody look like a freaking supermodel walking around and call them normal people. I mean, they make people.
I don't know what you're talking about. Beetle was pretty attractive.
I know, right?
Well, of course. I mean, who can resist Matthew McConaughey's voice?
All right.
I just want to point out, because I feel like everybody loves him, but it annoys me that he hangs his mouth open after he's done talking.
Oh, like this?
Wait, what?
Oh, sorry. The listeners can't see me do this, but I'm just hanging my
mouth. I feel like if you listen close enough, you could probably hear his mouth hanging open and him mouth breathing.
Wait. Do I have eyelids? Like that?
Yeah, I'm not even joking. Watch a Matthew McConaughey movie, and after he finishes a line or speaking, his mouth just hangs open.
Murph.
And I always tell my friends, I just want to like crawl into the movie and like slap up his chin.
Just
and
hold just, up his jaw.
Yeah, and just like yell at him and be like, "You're gonna catch a fly in there."
Also, Kai just
get it together.
I just swallowed a fly.
Also, Kai also just added on like in the credits they played the Shamisen version of "When My Guitar Weeps" by the Beatles.
What?
Wait, what?
Like the ending during the credits, the song they played.
Regina Spektor sings "While My Guitar."
Okay.
I have to say, Kubo had such good music. I don't know about you guys. Every time he played his guitar, I was just like jamming in the theater.
Well, I mean yes, Kubo had like super awesome soundtrack and a super awesome sound design, but most Laika movies do. It's not just Kubo. Paranorman, I remember that the sound design on that one was awesome, and the only thing that was also haunting about Coraline was the music behind it.
Yeah.
So they know audio as well.
Go ahead.
Sorry. It's just so much. It's like, can I just also like add on like Kubo is himself. Like I just feel like I just like this personality. It's just basically like. It's basically where
I got superpowers.
It's basically like just in the beginning, he just didn't like when he just started doing his origami street show. He just walking, just being all cool and such. They're saying like blink for a second and you will miss this everything. I was like, oh god. And so it's basically how later on in the films, especially when his parents were gone and like learning about his grandfather and like his aunt, he just basically just how he just kind of like matures in bed by saying, "I know what I had to need to do, to finish this." Like kind of like looking at it while that like in a way, like rather than just saying like, "Oh no, what should I do?" He just kind of like had this both kid. He like just kind of had like this kid, who later had to mature by saying, "Okay, I gotta do this right now."
Mm-hmm. Really quick, what do you guys, I guess something I noticed while watching it was memory loss was a really big thing in the movie with his mom having her memory loss, the Beetle
it's like
having...
It's like a power that's taken away from them.
Yeah, the Beetle having his memory loss and the grandfather at the end having his memory loss. So you've got three main characters there. Did you guys feel like that was, about adults losing their memory of what it's like to have faith in humanity as a child? Or what did you guys think about that?
Let me ponder for a sec, then I'll
Well, I always, going to that point, I always saw that as, you know, memory is power. Memory is, it's your strength. And, you know, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the blindness thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you... you know, can't remember, you know, the wonders and beauty that humanity can bring, then that's what, then, you know, then you yourself are, you know, are missing out, and you're, and you have the powers of darkness. Right. Whereas in that's in the grandfather had that, and he has no powers of, you know, of human, of humanity being good and beautiful. So when he is basically enlightened again without his memory, it's basically like a clean slate.
Mm-hmm. So I will add to that. I mean, yeah, pretty much that. So let's say, for example, you are person X. You've done a bunch of stuff in the past that you might either be super proud of or super not proud of. Then all of a sudden someone hits you with an amnesia pill. You don't really remember much about the person that you were before, but you're going to do your darnest to be the best that you can be moving forward. Open the door, actually. That's pretty much adding to the fact that it is a clean slate. But the fact that with Still Story, you're adding the fact that you slightly remember what happened beforehand. But again, the whole amnesia thing is, here is a clean slate. Here's your new situation and everything. Do whatever you can, I suppose.
All right. And before we move on to our final thoughts, Dario Marinelli did the score for the movie.
Nice.
He did the music. He's the guy who does a bunch of Joe Wright movies, mm-hmm. like Atonement, Pride and Prejudice, Anna Karenina, so on, so on. So everyone, what's y'all's final? What is the final thoughts before we move? Before we exit out of here?
My favorite part of the film was when I finally found out what Kubo and the Two Strings as a title meant. So right in the very end, where you're, when Kubo is at the lake with the giant caterpillar flying whatever he was, and his guitar strings break. He's like, wait, I have the strings of my mother's hair and the string of my father's bow. I have my hair too. I will put the Kubo and the Two Strings on my guitar, and I'll make a badass guitar solo. That was awesome, and that's when I found out, oh, that's what the title means. That's probably my favorite part of the film, and with the lore that is all self-contained inside the film itself, it was just a good package.
Nice. Okay. Kate?
When I go see an animation movie, I look at the art style. And I thought it was beautiful because I love Japanese and Chinese culture. And I love the perfect mixture of that they had in Kubo. And I really recommend it if anybody hasn't seen it yet.
Aaron?
I like the Laika films, as we know. So
we'll be here all week.
Yeah. But definitely, the storyline's more mature than your average kids' movie. It deals with really just better character development and heavier topics. Definitely think, even if you're not a kid, if you at least appreciate the Japanese culture and maybe some kung fu movies, give it a shot, because it's fantastic.
Cameron?
I guess to say, like, every type of... any type of like animated films has like different kind of like background, saying how they want to be written or what setting you want to put in. And I just feel like the Kubo and the Two Strings is just one of those films I feel like many people like should appreciate by saying how what is art style, what's culture. I was gonna say I love the Japanese like Asian type culture, what they did for this setting that they did for this film. Voice acting, I thought it was great. Of course, Matthew McConaughey. And so, I just feel like for many kids today, I think they should also take a look at Kubo Two Strings as well.
Yeah, I hope this, you know, if it doesn't make all the monies at the box office, I can't believe I just said that.
It's almost broken even.
Yeah, I guess.
Almost.
I mean, it's like, two-thirds of the way there?
Yeah.
If not, you know, please check it out on Blu-ray and DVD, and just, you know, build an audience, because I think Laika deserves the attention as much as, you know, something like Pixar and you know, well, there's really not any other great animation studio. I guess Disney. Disney Animation's coming back.
Frozen was good, I guess.
Yeah, Frozen, I guess, was okay. Yeah. That Wreck-It Ralph sounded... That was okay, I guess.
I liked Wreck-It Ralph.
You know they're making a second Wreck-It Ralph.
I know, and I'm really excited.
If Master Chief's not in it, I'm out.
All right. Folks, that is it for our show this week. Does anybody have anything to plug? I think you have a show.
We're about to record AOE, which is the gaming show. The topic for this week is going to be revolving around the upgraded consoles and the fact of campaigns should be a necessity or something in the way when it comes down to gaming in general. So that's the topic for this week.
Nice. And Cameron, you're on AOE, right?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Cool. We got Josh in the background. Shout out to Josh Phillips.
Hey, but also.
Oh, no.
Awesome.
He's something, folks.
All right.
I've had quite the day.
Oh. Well, everyone, thanks, everyone. Cameron, Aaron, Kate, Danilo, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes I get it mixed. I get it mixed up.
If you want, Danny is much easier.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll keep that in mind when in doubt.
Okay.
Thank you all for coming and talking about this movie. Hope you all can come back on. Y'all want to come back on more episodes and talk more about kid movies, because I usually do love kid movies, and I usually end up being the only person that reviews them. So if you guys want to ever talk about kid movies or any other films,
anytime.
Don't worry, Harley. Awesome. You have a friend now.
Awesome. All right, thanks everybody for joining in. You can find this podcast on KHZ Network on iTunes and Podbean, right?
Yep.
And you can follow me at Kale Smith. No, wait. That's mine.
You should remember your Twitter handle. Come on, man.
You can follow me at Movie Kale and at The Youth Critic. And you can also follow my blog at www.theyouthcritic.weebly.com. And next week we are going to be talking about the summer movie season.
Ooh.
Yep.
Or almost the lack of.
Yeah, the lack of the summer movie season.
Right.
But we're going to leave today honoring the late Gene Wilder. It's really sad that we're losing all these people.
This makes what, the fourth great actor that we lost this
year? Oh, it's more than that.
It's been a lot.
Yeah, we've lost now David Bowie, which mm-hmm. was devastating.
Alan Rickman.
Gene Wilder.
Would you like to chime in here, Josh?
Point the mic to him.
Yes, I would love to just, you know, kind of say that one of the side effects of getting old happens to be death.
Well, no shit.
That's literally life. What do you think?
This is the curse of 2016. Yeah,
I know. Everyone's dying. It's like the trend now, just to die in 2016.
Well, I guess by saying like someone like Gene Wilder's, like, not just with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like the other movie I said that came to mind that my friend begged me to watch was actually Blazing Saddles.
Oh, right, God. Right.
Oh, God, that movie was hilarious. I didn't know about that. I have never laughed that hard right here. But like seeing like someone how Gene Wilder just put so much effort and thought with his film is like I think like hearing with this, Mel Brooks left it with a quick comment, which I thought was just very heartwarming. Saying he blessed my movie with his magic, and then he blessed me with his friendship.
Right.
And so I just saying like with that much dedication, I'm sure Gene Wilder is just one hell of an actor. We're sure many people will hope take influence and know his art and hardship.
Yeah. I couldn't have said any better. So
yeah, thanks, Cameron, so much. So today, we will leave you with a little something from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look. And you'll see into your imagination. will begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it.